Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Hello. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Scan Radio Show number 2376. Presented by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, NASCA. My name is Jo Kalk, calling in from the beautiful Oregon coast. I'm an adult survivor of child abuse, and I will be your host this evening. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a nonprofit 501c3 organization which is self-supporting through our own contributions. Our focus is on child abuse trauma, prevention, intervention, and recovery. Tax-deductible donations are gladly received. We have a single purpose at NASCA: to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. Our website is www.naasca.org. And if you'd like to call in and join us, we have a great panel tonight, and come join us. It's going to be a great show. We have a wonderful guest tonight. It is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And I'm just going to mention who our guest is. Tonight's special guest is Darlene J. Clark from Pulaski, Tennessee, a returning NASCA family member. She's a survivor of severe child abuse and the author of Born in a Living Hell, about her torturous childhood. And I would like to now go open the mic for Darlene. Hi, Darlene. Thank you for being our guest tonight.
Thank you for having me here. I know I want everyone for coming and to support me. You know,
yes.
Abuse has always been taboo to speak about, and it's a tough subject, but we have to open our hearts and our souls and share our story, because abuse happens too often.
That's true. And so I think you know how it is, how the show goes, but I'm going to explain for those who are new. You talk about 15 to 20 minutes, starting probably with your earliest recollection, and then we turn it over to the panel, and one by one we ask them if they have questions or feedback for you, and then we go back to another round. We're hoping that we have 90 minutes, so we're hoping that we have about three sessions, and the last one, we'd like to hear about what you're doing now. Sound okay?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
All right. Well, take it away.
Okay. I started out in a very dysfunctional family, probably from a family that should not had children, but I'm not going to be bad about that, because there's a purpose for me and for the others as well. You know, we share a story, helping others. So I had older siblings who have told me that when I was born, which I'm a twin, and my twin sister's name is Marlene, Well, I've always been told that she came first just because I kicked her out.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So, you know. So a lot of times
like
when people
that.
Say, I'm checking you to see if you're kicking. I go, how high you want me to? But anyway. But anyway. My sister, I cannot go into her name and her stories, but
sure.
She shed some light on a lot of the abuse that happened to me when I was too early to tell. And we were abandoned when I was sold in a grocery store. Five of us were. That was supposedly five of my full-blooded siblings. You know, we had the same mom and dad. My aunt got tired of coming to the store and picking us up, which my sister, Gwen, had knew the number. So my aunt's phone number, so she called my aunt. But my aunt got tired of coming and picking us up, and then Mama come a week later to pick us up. You know, she was usually abandoned at the house, which I suppose at this time my older sister that's not full-blooded. She's a half-sibling. She probably in an orphanage at this time, and so was an older brother.
Oh.
So that's why they weren't there to care for us like they usually did. They would skip school just to take care of us because they didn't want to leave us babies home alone. So, like, when I was an infant, of course, there's my twin sister that's an infant. Then I had a brother that's a year older than me and a sister that's 2 years older than me. Then I had these two other siblings, you know, that's older, about six years older than me.
Wow.
Can you imagine all the diapers and the milk and everything that would have to go, you know?
That's a big family. Wow.
Because back then there was cloth diapers, you know? Yeah, back then, it was cloth diapers, and you had to wash with hands and hang up and everything, you know. But anyway, there's a lot in my life that I did not know until I started therapy, and this was after my hysterectomy. Back when I was married, I had two kids, and I had difficulty with that experience of childbirth and all, but I still had them. And the doctor, when he did it, after he did a hysterectomy, I was in the hospital for 5 days afterwards. And anyway, he pulled up a chair, and I said, "Uh-oh! Whenever a doctor pulls up a chair, this is serious stuff." Said, "Were you ever abused as a child?" "Oh yeah, but that's past. That's, you know, I'm fine, you know. It's all okay, you know." He says, "I had never seen anyone that messed up internally as I've seen you messed up." He said,
"Whoa.
I've seen some before, but I've never seen nobody with this magnitude." And he told me that my two kids, I shouldn't even had the two kids I had, that they had to be a true miracle. I said, "Well, I did get on my knees and pray for them before I got pregnant with them, that I have a baby, you know." So I said, "God answered my prayers, evidently."
Wow.
But anyway, the nightmare, that's when the nightmares and stuff started, and it was chaotic. And of course, it did not help that my husband was abusing me at home as well.
Oh, no. Oh, goodness. No.
And so this was around, I feel sorry for my kids. I did not abuse them, but they seen me in the different states because of the torture and the devastation that I was remembering, being drugged through the house by the hair of my head, remembering how my stepmother had pleasure just because she stuck mine and my twin sister noses in cow manure, make us keep our noses in the manure when we squatted down. At first we weren't willing to put our noses down in it, but she pushed our faces down into it, you know.
Goodness.
And if we found there, you know, to, and then my daddy's version of hide and go seek, he came into our bedroom and he had a 12 gauge welded at his side. He said, "All right, y'all ready to play hide-and-go-seek? And if I find one of y'all, you know, I'm going to shoot at you when I find you."
Oh, what? What? Yes. Wow.
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Oh, goodness.
And I remember that this was the time of the year that we had done plowed the garden. And we done mm-hmm. got a lot of the all the rocks out of it because no matter how much for each bean we miss, we got a beaten for each bean we miss, each tomato we miss, and each rock we missed in the garden if we come across a rock. So anyway, I didn't get to run very far, you know, before Daddy started coming out. And I don't know where the rest of the kids hid, but there was 9 of us kids living at home. But then there was, he got with my step, he divorced my mom back when I was 4 after that fiasco about the abandonment. My aunt wouldn't let my mom have him back. Mm. So he got with this mm-hmm. lady, and but she had 2 kids prior to that marriage. And then she had 1 with the marriage, you know, with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And but a brother of mine was that was 2 years younger than me, that was full-blooded. He was able mm-hmm. to take care of that youngest brother, you know, that was with their marriage. So he didn't get into a lot of these troubles, but he was still abused as well. But I'm here to tell
oh
my story
goodness.
And not, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I was out in a garden, and I was thinking, oh, no. Luckily, my body's so little. I was like a little, I was the size of a kindergartner, you know, back when I was 11 years old. I was that small and tiny. And
oh, wow.
I was just really little, so, but I laid flat on the ground in the garden, and I got behind mm-hmm. a mound, and Papa Dad didn't see me. But then I heard a lot of hooping and hollering going around, and Dad was shooting the shotgun up in the air while my stepmom was running around in front of him laughing like it wasn't fun.
Oh!
And I was like, this is about like, you know, now when I look at it, I'm like, this is like some of the hillbillies on the TV shows, you know, hooting and hollering, acting like they don't have no brains, you know.
Yeah,
but it was so good because I thought, you know, a shell could come down and hit somebody and kill them, you know, when it comes down. But I had put my head back down hoping he didn't see me when he was going around. Well, it got quiet about 5-10 minutes, and I got brave. You know, of course, when it's 5-10 minutes, you can feel like 30 to 40 when you're in such a devastating time, you know. Like time kind of stand still, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I got up and I looked above, raised my head, looked out, see if the clear, it was safe. Okay, I put my head back down behind the pile. I said, phew, I'm safe momentarily. Yes. You
wow.
know, and I was praying that he got his mind on something else. Well, a little bit more time had passed, and then I looked up and like, oh no, there he is. He sees me. He's raising a gun and pointing it in my direction. And I dumped my head back down. Next thing I know, dirt's going all over me. And with the dirt dust had cleared, I seen that the rock was right there. The rock protected me.
Wow. Wow.
Yes. Then I laugh about it and say, well, Jesus, the rock, you know. But I got up and I could not feel my legs whatsoever because I knew I had to get up because he's going to shoot at me regardless, okay? I thought for sure I was dead because he was still
goodness.
In the process of, it seemed like all the way walking to me, he was still reloading the gun. So it must have been, it was really slow motion. And, but something told me, like it was something taking over me or something, or an angel or something helping me or something. It said, do not run because he wants to shoot you in the back.
What?
Saying that you would be probably shot an animal or something. And I said, just walk to him, look at him right in the eyes. So I did as his voice was telling me inside, you know, something was guiding me, and I was listening to that guidance, okay? And I walked up to him, and he said, damn it, I wanted you to run so I could shoot you in the back. And I said, whoa,
whoa,
you know?
Yeah.
Whoa. It's like, okay, you know? And I just stood there like dumbfounded, you know. I was afraid to move to the left, to the right. You know, he still had a gun in his hand, even though he was walking the other direction. He said he needed to kill something today. And so he was walking away, and then all of a sudden he turned back towards me, threw the gun to the side, and tackled and raped me.
Oh.
But I thought, at least the rest of the kids are safe momentarily. You know what I'm saying? At least nobody got killed.
Yeah.
So
That
was the good part of looking at that. I was 10 years old at this time.
Oh, goodness, girl. Oh. Wow.
Yeah. So that was devastating. When I was 11, the court system was so screwed up that when the custody battle, when we went to the summer vacation, before I could go on that, I got to tell, you know, how my daddy used to knock me to the floor, hit me in the back of my head and knock me to the floor, and told the other siblings, me all over my body, they had to form a circle around me and kick me as hard as they could and constantly and call me stupid, fat, ugly, and retarded.
Oh, my goodness.
So all up in a thing into a little fetal position, you know, and I was trying to protect, you know, and all. And the next thing I know, I'm waking up with one of my aunts sponging me off.
Oh.
And, of course, I had wet the bed because I was knocked unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
So then my stepmom, after my aunt left, my stepmom said, you wet the bed when you were asleep, so you're going to have to wear the wet bed sheet all day. So she wrapped that around my neck, and I had to wear that around the house all day.
Okay. Well, wow.
And then the
How
food.
How about we take a break? Go ahead. Okay.
I'll tell you about a food situation where we were all, of course, when it was time to eat, can you imagine 9 kids having to sit at one table? So it had to be a huge one, okay? We had like picnic benches inside the house on both sides for the kids to sit on. But Daddy hated how I was breathing, which I found out later on. He twisted my nose with some pliers and blocked one side, and I did not know that. He did that to me when I was 6. I found that out later, okay? But anyway, that's why I was having trouble breathing and chewing at the same time without making a noise. So he told me, he would get me a whole raw onion, take my food away from me, and tell me that I just got to eat the whole raw onion for supper. And then at times, he told me to bark at my food, and then he poured my plate of food. Here I was still 10 years old, okay? And I had to get on my hands and knees, and I had to bark to his satisfaction of how a real dog barks. And then I was to lap it up just like a dog laps it up off the floor.
Oh,
and I had
tears
on my face. And then sometimes he would say, well, just go to your room. You go without supper. And I was thinking, well, you know, to myself, of course, you did not talk bad back talk, okay? You knew better, okay? So you did as you were ordered. So
yeah.
I went to my bedroom, but he called me back in there, and tears still be coming down because it was so harsh. It was unbelievable. And so I had to start barking at my food, and then I had to start growling, acting like somebody's fixing to touch my food. Where nobody better get it, you know? And then he went ahead and ate it, and I would not be able to go to bed until I licked it all off the floor.
Oh, goodness. Oh, goodness.
So we'll leave it at that now.
Wow. Okay. You have given us a lot to think about. And fortunately or unfortunately, when I hear something, I visualize it. So I have just the visualizations just going in my mind like, oh. Okay,
I used to wonder if this was going to be the day that they would kill me. I would be around the house wondering that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's go to the panel now. And I'm sure there's going to be questions or at least some feedback for you. Okay? So let's start off.
All right.
So let's start off with Bailey from Florida. Bailey, thank you for being on the panel, and you're on with Darlene.
Hi, Darlene. How are you?
I'm fair to Midland. How are you?
I'm okay. Thankful to be alive.
Thank God.
Yes. Well, I never really knew your story. I'm dumbfounded how you're able to having gone through all this stuff that you've gone through, how you're able to live a semi, you know, pretty normal life. I mean, you know, what helped you overcome, well, we never overcome, but what helped you become strong enough to leave the situation?
Right.
That's my first question.
Okay, one thing that really made me strong enough is I knew I had to make several different choices. I only had one life that I was living. I do not have another chance at this life. Do I want to be miserable the rest of my life? Or do I want to be happy? Do I want to other people to judge other people as my family had judged me? That would not be right, because then they would have the right to judge me how their exes or anybody done them. So, you know, living for that and striving for that has really been a wonder to me.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you.
Was writing your book, was that healing for you?
Well, when I know that my book has helped a couple of people, that's when it really helped. It don't really help me per se as I write it. The only way is when it, you know, somebody reads and say, "Oh, this has helped me a lot." That's when it helps me.
Wow!
I give you a lot of credit.
Thank you.
You're doing a great job. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bailey. Good question.
I know this.
Okay, Carol. You're on with Darlene. Thanks for being on our panel.
Yeah. Hey, Darlene. First of all, I know Darlene. I've spoken to her an awful lot. And let me tell you something. She is one tough little girl. Yes, she is. I don't know how tall you are now, but I do know that you're one tough little girl, because there's a lot of kids that wouldn't be able to handle what you handled, okay? Mm-hmm. And to be able to still be standing. And I really, really appreciate you telling your story. I have one question for you, honey. I want to go way back, okay, because there's something
all
that's
right.
bugging me. Okay, you said that your mother, well, they have one child, your father and your stepmother together. Is that correct?
Well, they had one that's living, and then a couple of years later, I would say about five to 6 years later, they had one, but it died.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Okay, that answers that question. Okay, because I was wondering if maybe they had treated, I was curious if they had treated that child differently because they had a child together, you know what I'm saying?
Well, they treated her kids, you know, the stepkids, her kids, he treated them a lot better in some ways.
Right.
But for instance, how he did one of her sons was like whenever my daddy would call Gwen, then Bart would come. They were the same age, okay? And then whenever you know, that's the intermixed family, you know, whenever they got together, but they happen to be the same age. And then May and Charles Jr. are the same age, so whenever they call, like, Charles Jr., May will come, and then when they call, like, Marlene will come, and when they call Marlene, Darlene come. Well, anyway, Dad got mad at Bart, and he made him get out at Beltline Road and wait to the truck, wear a lady's dress, go and hike up the dress, and if a trucker did not honk their horn at him, then he got spanked for everyone that did not honk the horn.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you what. I consider them monsters, okay? You know how I am. And
yeah.
Like, I consider my family monsters, too. So we're all in this together. And I'm so glad that you're sharing your story with other people, honey, because you have quite a story to tell. Yes, you do. And I'm just happy to be here with you. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. And I forgot to say that the reason why I am still here today is because God's grace and mercy.
That's right.
Good.
That's right.
All right. Thank you. And thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a great big panel. We got 11 callers, so I'm just going to keep moving on.
Wow.
Linda from New Jersey, thank you for getting the phone numbers for people, the names and phone and the names and places for people. I really appreciate that. They just all came at once. So, Linda, you are on the Darlene.
I got as many as I could. So
you did good.
My pleasure. Darlene, I am in such awe of you. You are such a survivor. And as a therapist, I can't imagine the damage that some of that stuff has done to you. And you come out the other side and you are thriving and you are helping others. And I just want to say one thing you said that really struck me and brought back a memory, triggered a memory for me, was that when your father said, "Your breathing bothers me." I remember when I was going through my abuse, my mother, I would beg to sleep with her because it was my only sense of safety when my father was away. And she would say to me, because I would thrash and have nightmares, and she would say to me, "If you don't stop moving and stop breathing, I am going to beat the you-know-what out of you." And so I would lay there awake all night, stiff as a board, not moving, just so that she wouldn't get upset with me. And you just triggered that memory. I haven't thought about that in a long time. So I just want to thank you for sharing your story. And I'm going to let Joe move on because we got a lot of people. So thanks, Darlene.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing that. You know, she was sick as well. You went there for safety and security, and she wasn't there for you. I apologize for that. I'm so sorry that you had to endure that. I'm not going to apologize for her, you know, apologize that you had to endure that.
Both of us, yes. Me too.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Linda. All right. We're going down to, we're going on to William from Alabama. William, you're on with Darlene.
Hey, Darlene. Darlene, yeah,
hello.
I know Darlene personally.
Huh?
So, I know Darlene personally because I was helping with her book when she wrote it, so.
Cool.
The story, going over with it, unbelievable. I can't believe parents and things would do stuff like that. So I know she's gotten stronger, and she's really helped a lot of others since she's done this stuff.
Thank you.
That's great.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I've seen a lot of stuff, too, with this being in the court system, because I'm a retired legal assistant, private investigator, so I've seen a lot of this stuff.
Wow.
And I used to be a deputy sheriff, so I've seen a lot of that through the court systems and things. Because I've seen some of the abuse and stuff that went on, because I was up in Milwaukee on the north side, and some of the projects and things like that, and their mothers and drug addiction and a whole bunch of other things.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thank you for being on with and supporting Darlene by being on the panel. I appreciate that. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, William.
You're welcome.
Okay. All right. Now I'm going to – I'm just open the mic for area code 720. May I ask who's calling, please? Hello? 720? Area code? All right. We'll come back. Maybe you're just... Oh, you did. Okay.
Oh, I said, I bet they had the mic
okay.
still muted.
Yeah. Come back to them. Now I'm going to area code 615. So 615, may I ask who's calling, please? Okay. Well, we've got a couple listening. Okay.
I think mm-hmm. he might be just there listening and stuff. I told him mm-hmm. that he could call and listen to my story, you know. So.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah. Just want to give them the opportunity if they wanted to say anything. Okay. Now we're going to Tammy and turning her mic on. Tammy from Alabama, you are on with Darlene.
Hi. I'm a friend of Darlene's, too. I've known her for several years.
Ah.
And I've seen part of the effects that this abuse has had to her. But she is an amazing person.
Hmm.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for being on the panel to support her.
Thank you. Love you, gal.
Love you too, hon. You take care.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Wow, this is nice to have a support group coming in. All right. Now we're going to Sylvie from Nevada. Sylvie, you're on with Darlene.
Hi, Darlene. Can you all hear me?
Hello.
Yep.
Yes.
Yes.
Hi. I am here to support my friend Darlene. I am here to be a witness to her profound abuse. I am here to love you and support you, Darlene. I love you and support you. How you survived what you have survived, how you have thrived, just like boggles my mind. It just like why you aren't in the lockdown ward of a psych unit drooling over paper mache on heavy meds in crafts class is beyond comprehension. And you are a testimony to the human spirit and to somebody earlier was saying we never really overcome. You are overcoming your abuse because like me, you are transcending it by turning all of your despair into service. You have found a purpose for your life and is much bigger than your pain. And I clearly see that in you. You are here to serve. You are a servant of God. And I admire you and respect you. I admire you and respect you. I admire your honesty. I admire your strength. I admire your truth, your transparency. And I want to tell you and tell everybody that a lot of people don't know that child abuse survivors like we are, Darlene, are many, many times end up in domestically violent marriages. I did too. I've been drug into the kitchen by my hair, screaming, whimpering because I didn't serve my husband a Diet Coke on my vacation. So I've been there, darling. I mean, I've been there too.
Thank you, Sylvie.
You amaze me. You amaze me, girlfriend, and I am honored. I am honored to be here to witness your story. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for being on the panel. All right. Now we're going to Beverly in Tennessee. Beverly, you're on with Darlene.
Hello, Darlene. Darlene is a good friend of mine, and the way I met her was she was taking care of someone else's child. She wasn't getting her just rewards for what she had done with that child and for that child. He was neglected, and she stepped right in and took care of him. And she gave him her money when she needed it for herself. And she's just absolutely the most giving human being. She would give you the last morsel of food. And, you know, for what she's been through, I've worked with abused children over the years, and they try to hang on to and hoard whatever they can just in case it's taken away from them. And she's not like that. And she's, from her abuse, she has learned to be kind and giving and respectful of others, because that's not what she grew up with, and that's what she wants to give to others is what she didn't have. And I admire her more than anything in this world. And she is a very simple person, nothing elaborate about her. And all she wants to do is to hear, as the lady said earlier, that by her listening to this program, it brought something back to mind for her. And that's what my friend wants, is to help people come to reality and to knowing what's going on so they can handle it and move on. And by her books, that's how she handles it, writing about it and sharing it, because that helps her kind of open up and realize, and then it gives her the opportunity to help other people as well. And she knows who I am, and she knows I love her dearly. So,
I love
you too.
That's great. Thank you
so much.
I love you too.
Thanks for being on the panel. And Laura from Wisconsin, you're on with Darlene.
Hi, Darlene. It's been great over the past couple of days getting to know you and getting to know more of your story. I just want to thank you for being on the show. We have a lot in common, and I look forward to getting to know you even more.
Well, I love you, Gal. Right? I'm glad we became friends, and we do have a lot in common. And as I told you, that I'm there for you anytime you need me.
And I'm there for you.
Thank you.
That's
I
great.
I love you, girl.
Thank you, Laura. Wow. This is what NASCA is about, all the support that you're getting, and that's a big family. And all right, well, let's get back to your story, Darlene, and pick it up. We want to make sure that you have time to tell about what you've been doing recently, but if you want to, this is sort of the middle part of your arc, and so if you share what you would like. Thank you.
Right. So later on, we had summer vacation. And we went to go visit Mom and my stepdad. Well, they ended up fighting for custody of us and winning. And I could not believe the court system stuck us with Mom, who, you know, I really didn't like for some reason. You know, I had that back memories that I didn't really remember. You know what I mean? The back of me, the mind, it was like I just trust her to stop. I don't trust, you know. So anyway, but I didn't remember some of the stuff. So anyway, stepdaddy was on probation for murder. He was serving 26 years of probation. He already served 26 years in jail. So I could not believe the court system stuck us with them.
Wow.
I was like, what? It was unreal. And when I lived there, she did not, let me say what happened right after I got home for the court system. My siblings and all, my stepdad had a Ford Galaxy 500, and we all climbed out of, we got back home, and he said, okay, everybody out of the car. Well, we all climbed out of the car. He said, okay, everybody back in the car. So we all climbed back in. He said, Jeanette, I mean, Darlene, you got to get out of the car because you're not blood related to no one. You're not kin to no one. You're not blood related. This is, you're not blood related to mom, your mom or sisters, none of them is kin to you. So get out of the car. You cannot go and celebrate with it.
Oh.
So he said, go find your own food somewhere. Go bum from a neighbor.
Oh, my goodness.
So they left me there, and I went and climbed, went into the woods because I was locked out of the house. So I hid in the woods, and then a friend of mine, they were eating, but I was not going to go visit them while they were eating and ask for food. I was not going to do that. I rather starved, and that's what I did most of the years that I lived with them. But anyway, I would go and knock on the door when I knew that they were through with supper. They said, oh, I'm sorry, we're through with supper. Come in. I said, sure. I said, no, Biggie, I didn't want to eat anyway. I was trying to make sure you were done with supper before I came over. I said, I just wanted to come over for a little while. They all went out to eat, you know, so I'm not really all that hungry anyway, which I lied, you know. I didn't want them to feel like they had to take care of me. And I did not want them to feel like I was a burden coming over and taking what food they might have. You know, they might have needed all the food, you know, that they had for their family. You know, I wasn't going to take out of their mouth.
Wow.
And so when I got back home and later on with the years going on, I remember that the teacher made us do a report on, she made me do a report on Hitler, and I said, please don't give me that one, please don't, because my from Germany. And I wrote about how Hitler was a bad man, how he killed the Jews, such and such and such, so on, right? She got my paper, she said, how dare you speak badly of Hitler, good man, and he tore up my homework. And she said, you better do a report, and you better show me, and you better write to what a good person he was, you know? And I could not do it. I could not do it, girl. I could not do it.
Yeah.
So Marlene was in my class, in my room, during that subject. And so when I was in school, the teacher said, okay, Darlene, you got your report? And I just hung my head in shame. And she said, well, you're getting an F.
Oh.
And tears, you know, flowing down my eyes because of the demeaning that what had happened, you know. Didn't see my face because, you know, I had my face hid, you know, my back was the other direction because we sat at little tables and around. But anyway, then Marlene stood up and she said she did her homework. Teacher said, where is it? Well, Mom tore it up. She said, why did she tear it up? Did she say Hitler was good? She said, no. She said, what did she say in it? She said, she told how Darlene said how she did the Hitler was a bad guy, killed the Jews and such on and all, and Mom got mad and she tore it up. And the teacher came up to me, patted my back, and she said, I'm so sorry, you get an A.
Oh,
but
then wow.
The whole class knew that my mother was pro-Hitler, and that was so embarrassing during that time period.
Oh.
You know,
wow.
It was so embarrassing.
Oh.
Yeah. So, but she would not feed me, and she had a job at, like, Monkey Ward's. That's from Montgomery Ward's. We call it, call it Monkey Ward's.
Monkey Ward's,
And, while she was gone, I got to sneak in the house and eat me something, which they didn't have, like, they didn't have lunch meats or nothing. Sometimes they had peanut butter jelly, that goober stuff. That's got the peanut butter jelly meat. Sometimes they have that. And I picked me a sandwich, hurry up, clean up my dishes. Well, they didn't know that I had been in the house at all and ate. My siblings ate at friends' houses and stuff, so they stayed over there. You know, Mama didn't see some of them for days, and she didn't ever worry that somebody might be dead, kidnapped or anything, you know. And but anyway, I had to mainly survive on salt, pepper, mayonnaise and ketchup sandwiches for the 2 years I lived there.
Oh, goodness. Goodness.
And
wow.
While they were home, I stayed out in walking the cow pastures and stuff like that, staying hid. And I decided to play. I did something foolish, y'all. I want y'all to know this. I was so devastated thinking that because my mother told me I had to get a job if I wanted food. And I worked planting tobacco. Well, I ended up with pneumonia. And here I was, 11 years old, okay? But then I went, and I ended up with pneumonia, and so the doctor made me bedridden for a week, you know, do not get out of bed, you know, basically, you know, get over the pneumonia stuff. Well, when I went back to work, they said, you're fired. And I begged them, I said, please, I had pneumonia. I had no way of contacting you. Please give me a chance. And they said, no, we're sorry. You know, you didn't show up.
Oh, goodness.
And all that. And the mom said, I don't care. You get you a job. I taught you how to be a prostitute. And I was like, what?
Oh, what? Wow.
That's why I didn't like her. You know, that's why I didn't like her. Now, then it like the light bulb come on. So I can only eat if I prostituted myself around.
Wow.
I could not even go into the lunchroom at school because it made me so nauseous to smell of food. You know, so it was, so I started playing a danger game because I said, well, they don't care whether I live or die. So I started watching, well, I was playing hopscotch. I had drawn out on the dirt by the railroad tracks. And I started doing different things. I seen how slow the rhythm of the trains as it was coming to a halt and all.
Then
I decided one day I had to get to school and I was running late and my sibling wouldn't give me a ride. And they said, you find your own way. Just walk. We always had to walk to school anyway, but they had rides. But anyway, she would not give me a ride to school. And so I had to go up underneath the train.
Oh.
And I was really scared of going up underneath the train, you know, so I'd make the school on time. But I did it. So that led on to the danger game, which the danger game would be I started playing a game with the trains when it was moving slowly, start to crank back up or something and start going real slow. I went from side to side to see how many times I could go from one side of the, you know, to the other side of track, to the other side of track. How many times I could do that before it would go too fast. Well, I finally stopped playing that game when at one time that my shoe came off in between the wood and of the, you know, where the road is, where the car drives over that part, where the wood and then the rail right there, that whole slot, my shoe came off. But I had to grab my shoe right quick, you know, so I would have shoes to wear, you know. But that about killed me. And, you know, doing like, whoa, you know, I tripped. I could have done with that leg. And I said, well, I guess I do care. That's when I realized I do care, you know. And then a neighbor saw me, and I did not know she saw me. But she told my mom about it. Here I was probably at this time 12 years old. And the neighbor said, told her about me playing with a train going up underneath it was moving and all. And mom said, I don't care if she dies or not.
Oh, really? Oh, my goodness. Wow.
I don't care if she dies or not, you know. You know, that. But then I bothered them. Finally got to move back with my dad, at least with my dad and my stepmom. I had food to eat, and I had a bed to sleep in because I failed to say that I would wait till they go to bed at night, and then I'd climb into the back seat of Daddy LC's car when they went to bed, and I could tell they'd been in bed long enough, and I'd get in the back seat of the car, and I'll sleep there.
Oh, okay. Wow. Very resourceful. Very resourceful.
Yeah.
But,
I had to take care of myself, basically, you know.
Is this a good breaking point for another round of questions, or do you have a little bit more we'd like to share first?
There's a lot more to go, but I know that later on I went back with my dad, and then he died. He had a talk with me before he went to this job. I had to turn 14 when I went. I was 13 and turned 14 before that Christmas because my birthday is in October. So I ended up with bronchitis again, bronchial pneumonia, and he stayed home for church with me. And church services on a Wednesday night usually last just an hour. With this one, my parents, my stepmom, and the other siblings and all were gone for at least 3 hours, because if you ever made homemade peanut brittle on top of the stove, how long that takes? He cooked that for me, and it was done, and it was cold and everything before they got back home. But he made a huge fire to get me to burn off the fever I was having, and he said, "Well, I'm fixing to come back from this job, and when I come back, I'm going to take you away. And I'm sorry for all the abuse I had done, but it was your stepmom got me to do it."
Huh.
And I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, when I come back, I'm going to marry you. And I said, marry me?
What?
I said, church would not allow that. He said, they will once they know the truth. And I thought, the truth? He said, well, I'll tell you the truth when I come back, you know. But he died on the job, and he didn't get back to me, so I never found out the truth.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's go to the panel with that one. All right. Bailey. You're back on with Darlene.
Well, first I want to thank Linda for putting in the names, because that was my job today, and I still haven't learned how to do that. So thank you, Linda. Darlene, your story is incredible. It's probably one of the most, I don't even have a word for it, that I've heard so far. And I have to say that I give you tremendous credit, I look at you with awe that you have been able to come through all of that and continue to live your life. And help, and like you said, writing that book, helping others. And we had a large panel today, and you have tons of friends. So obviously you're a very well-liked person. Again, just tremendous. I'm in awe of you, and I hope that God continues to give you the strength to help others and go on and live a happy, healthy, and safe life so that you can continue doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much for that.
My pleasure.
By God's grace and mercy, I am here. One thing that really helped me, I'll tell you one of the things, is finding a psychiatrist that believed me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shocked when he told me that I was doing good, that majority of people, that one of the things that happened to me would put them in an institution for life, and here I'm staying out, and I had a lot more that happen to me. He said, if somebody says you're not doing good, he says, I'm telling you, you're doing damn good.
I agree. 100%.
Thank you. Thank you, Bailey.
So, for him giving me that motivation, you know, and believing me, that's what really helped.
That's great. Thank you. All right, Carol.
Thank you.
You're on with Darlene.
Yeah, Darlene, we all think you're amazing, you know, really, really, really amazing. There's a lot of things that I can identify with, you know, in my story. And a lot of us go through such horrible, horrible, horrible things in life. And I happen to believe in my faith. That's what kept me going. And
right.
And I had some counselors that I went to for a while because they yanked me off the street and told me I needed help, and they were right. And that was through a church. And there are some good churches, believe it or not. But anyway, you know, I think you're amazing because you went through, it was like every day was like a different episode. Boom, 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 boom. And, you know, and for that to happen to someone, there was like no comic relief. You know, I'm a little bit on the comic side. Yeah, I'm thinking to myself,
right.
I can't put comedy into this one because, you know, there's just so much that you went through. And yet you came out standing, okay? You're still standing. And I can identify also, too, because when I wrote my book, I felt nothing. It was almost like I was looking at somebody else's story. And that it does help, though, knowing that people, you know, when they read your book, that it does help them. And I think that's what we're here for. This is part of our mission here at NASCA, and that is, of course, is to help others. And you're doing that by telling your story, and you, too, wrote a book and all this other stuff. And we do it by poetry. We do it by songs. We do it by whatever way, presentations. We do it by whatever way we do it. We do it. And thank you so much for, you know, sharing tonight because I think you're awesome.
Oh, you're awesome.
All right. Thank you.
Now watch out. You've got to give me a big head now.
Okay.
Thanks. Thanks, Carol. All right. William, you're on with Darlene. If you're interested. William?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah, she's went through a lot, and she's come to the other side, and she's still getting stronger. And there was a lot of damage that happened, but she's overcoming a lot of it.
Mm.
A lot more than a lot of people really knew. But
yeah.
She's growing stronger, and she's getting the message out, and she's explaining and helping a lot of others.
Yeah.
So,
yes,
in
true.
In a lot of ways, she is very awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I agree with you.
You're welcome.
Thank you,
well,
William.
You know, when I heard Carol talk a few minutes ago, and she was like trying to not do comedy, but at times we have to express comedy to be able to get past the bad that's going on. We have to laugh about or make a joke about something. So when she was explaining that, all of a sudden, I was thinking about one of those Looney Tunes cartoons that all of a sudden how somebody tapes will just run across the visions of the, you know, like tapes of the screen of the video just going,
yeah.
I'm like, okay, we can joke out of that, you know, but it's not funny about any of it happening. It's just that we can make for survival at times. We don't want to be down all our lives. You know, we got a choice whether how we look at something and how we're going to bring it up, how we're going to get from the dark shades you look through, and then you get on the other side and you actually see light now. You actually see hope.
That's true. Yes. All right. Well, that's true. And we're going to Tammy. Tammy, you're on with Darlene.
Well, you've been talking about her writing ability. She's a very smart lady, and she does so many other things. She does a lot of arts and crafts.
Oh.
And she gives these things to people that she feels it would make them happy.
Oh, that's great. I hope she talks about it. In the next segment. Thank you. Thank you. That's good to know. All right. And now Sylvie. You're on with Darlene.
Hi, Darlene.
Hello.
Love ya. You know, one thing about your story, a couple things. You know, for a child, you were so wise, so much wiser than your parents and your step parents. When you noticed that that when he was shooting up in the air, how crazy it was, and that your intuition told you he was going to shoot you in the back, okay? And then when the courts put a murderer with you, you said, what? You know, you knew that was nuts, and you were a kid. They were crazy, and you were the wise one. Then when your father wanted to marry you, okay, and you told me your story, and I'm going to let you tell it because it's your story, but there was a secret there, but you were the wise one, and you knew that was crazy, okay? And I'd also like to say that, can I just say, Carol from New Jersey, I got your book, and I'm reading it. I'm on chapter 3, and you are a great writer, girlfriend. And,
yeah, I have
to. I also use humor. Oh, my God. Listen, I cry every day. Crying is part of my healing. And I don't make myself cry. I just weep. And I am so, so, so blessed to be able to no longer resist it. Oh my God, I stuffed my tears because I knew if I started crying, I'd never stop. And now I weep, 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 weep. But guess what? I feel a lot of bliss. Heaven on earth. Heaven on earth. And I have a very perverse sense of humor. And oh my God, I laugh. I laugh and I am funny. And, you know, it's a beautiful
thing.
So I am just like you, Carol. Oh, my God. It is part of my healing, part of my healing. It's all, you know what? Mother God gives a million times more than she ever took away from me. I am so blessed. My life is so rich and so full, and so is everybody's peers. We're those blessed
keep it about Darlene. And thank you very much. And we're moving to Laura. Laura, you're on with Darlene. Thank you.
Hi, Darlene.
Hello.
I'm learning more and more about you as you speak and as you tell your story. And I just want to say it's an honor to be on the panel with you as our guest host. And I want to thank you for your friendship, and I hope we can grow and be together as friends.
Yeah, there ain't no hoping we can grow there. We are growing, and you know, we'll be stronger friends too. So there's no hoping there, girl. You got me. You're stuck with me.
All right.
cool. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Laura. All right. We've got about 25 minutes. So if you want to tell a little bit about where you are, or if you want to finish the last of that, this will be probably, we've been averaging about half an hour per session, including the questions and answers. So I just wanted to let you know that this will probably be the last major segment for this show. Okay? So,
okay.
Go for it. We want to hear. We want to hear.
Okay, different things. And, some things just did not make sense. Like my twin sister, Marlene, her blood type is totally different than mine. Even though we're paternal, she's Rh negative. And then Dr. Sobitz and Mom had us both. So I'm thinking, so that might be why my records are sealed or my twins isn't, you know? But then But also, my daddy said he wanted to marry me, right?
Yeah.
And what the church would allow us to marry us, he wasn't my father. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then when I was with my mom, I got custody, supposedly my birth mom, and my stepdad, right after the case, saying, none of us related to you, not even blood kin. So it's like, I doubt this is even my family, you know?
Oh, wow. Wow. Amazing.
But anyway, whenever I started the therapy, okay, the first therapist I had was very bad. We did not have insurance at the time, and I had agoraphobia. I was so afraid of stepping out of the house, afraid of being attacked. The nightmares were rampant. The different things going on, you know, the different switching and feeding me. And I was afraid, you know, of course I was ugly and everything else, you know. And my family didn't love me. And the preacher, the cop said he could go ahead and hit me all he liked as long as he didn't kill me. And the elder of the church that had known me for a lot of years said it's best to go ahead and let him kill me. It's my only way to heaven. So
I
had
got
no,
it from all ends. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and I was wondering what was so wrong with me, you know. But anyway, I had to get to the root of the sexual abuse, and that from that bad therapist, he would lock me in the room. He would lock the door. He said he didn't want his wife to walk in on us. But later on, he got an office building apart where it was away from home. But he still locked the door and the key away. And when he had to go to the bathroom, I had to go in there with him, because he didn't trust me in there. And then I had to go and even sit in his lap. And he would say, well, what happened today? And I hated sitting on his lap and him holding me in a bear hug. And he had tape on his pants, you know, it was wet right there, you know. And that was sick, that I had to sit in his lap and then him. I told him what happened today. He said, no, this is what happened, okay? I had to tell him that this is what happened and agree to that. That's what happened. He told my husband and an elder, a different elder, that he had to do some unconventional therapy to me. So they were okay with him touching my boobs and doing different things.
Oh. My goodness.
But anyway, I found there was some good that therapy, because I had quit school before, and he took me to get my GED, and I passed it with flying colors, and different things like that. And I did get to where I could go places, and without so much fear, I guess, because I was getting away from him, driving home, being but it was tough, and when insurance time finally came, well, I got to see a different doctor that was a psychiatrist that believed me. And I uncovered quite a bit of things. Like, I uncovered the fact the first time about sexual was when I was about 2 years old, where we remember the old metal kitchen tables back in the 70s, 70s. And it had coloring on the top of it, like yellow or green or blue, different colors like that. We had a yellow one, and my mom got my naked body and put me on the table and told me I better lay still. And Daddy was sitting right there with his beer buddy, and they opened up their beer bottle at the side of the table, which Daddy's buddy, his beer bottle got a little dick on it, which means part of the glass broke.
Mm.
But he went ahead and went, and Daddy stood behind him as the guy put the beer bottle up me. But my mom was told me, I better lay still. He gave her $30 to do this.
Oh.
So that was my first time when I got to the root of the sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got to, when my daddy was, when I was 4 years old, I was laying on the couch, and Daddy just come in there and spread my legs, and he had a knife in his hand, and he cut 2/3 off of one side of the lips of one of my, you know, on the outer.
Oh,
lips.
No. Oh.
But see, the thing I can remember is then, from then, after he did that, the next thing I remember is being in a tub of water, and it was all blood red, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I go back and think of it, I know it's bloody water, you know. But they never got me mental attention or nothing. I could have bled to death.
Mm-hmm.
And my stepmom used to say, well, you know, I stopped your temper tantrums when you were 4 by holding your head down and sinking full of water until you went unconscious. But how did I not die? How did I not drown, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, God made sure he saved me from them, would not let them kill me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I had more lives than 9 at the time, but I might not be so lucky it didn't happen. You know, because I can feel the pain now.
But how are you doing now?
After my daddy, I got a house. And this was a therapy that this very, very bad thing that I will never get over is her holding me down while her son, my stepmom held me down while her son raped me.
Yeah.
And I was so controlled, you know, they pulled, how she drugged me through the house by the hair of my head and all kind of things where she had total control of my thoughts or whatever. And it was bad when the next thing I know, I'm remembering that she made me lay on the kitchen floor. Next thing I know, she put the coat hanger up me. Then, next thing I know, I'm holding a baby in my arms.
Oh, my goodness.
And
wow.
We bought and everything, and I was too weak to get up off the floor, so I had assumed that this was my baby, you know, and everything, you know. And so, like, the conception, because I didn't remember about my brother raping me, my half-brother. And, I mean, my stepbrother, that was her kid, so stepbrother. So next thing I know, she bends down and she gets them out of my hands. And I'm watching her, still as I'm still laying on the floor, and I'm watching her go towards the kitchen sink, but to the right of it where the Civil War door is. Then I see the knife go over her head, and then I see it go down. And next thing I know, I'm standing at the side door of the house and watching as she's carrying this blue bundle, and I assumed it was my baby, and throwing it on the fire that she had been burning for 3 days. And fires was in and around it the whole time for 3 days.
Wow.
So whenever I remember that therapy, he said, well, she knew how to dispose of a body, he said, because it was hot enough to get cremate, then the tires will mask any human remains. So she got away with murder. So if I try to call and report it, then you might go to jail because she might say, was you that done this? And you will be in jail the rest of your life. She did. He said, so we can't report.
Wow.
So it was devastating. Now what I did, and I used, after I remembered that, oh man, my altars and parts of me were switching in every direction. I was so angry, you know, I didn't know how to handle why didn't I protect him? I was blaming me. Why didn't I protect him? It's your fault. Mm-hmm. You didn't protect him. You know, we're just constantly that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I already had two live children, you know, at this time. And it was so difficult, and it still is difficult for me to deal with, you know. So that's one thing I'll never, ever get over. And because that is a life, and you can't just say get rid of life, you know what I mean? I'm probably the only one that's remembering and preserving that person's life as being a true living soul, you know? And, but years later, in therapy after I uncovered that, it was kind of crazy, you know? I didn't care whether I kept trying suicide and that wouldn't work. I got mad because I got so mad at God. I had knives and stuff, and I tried to slit my wrist. Nothing would cut me. Tried razor blades. Nothing would cut me. I was so mad at God. I said, let me do this.
Wow.
I would be sawing away, you know, at them, using a serrated knife would cut anything, you know, and I'm like, it would not even cut me. But now that I'm on the upside, you know, like on the past the shame, now that I'm on a better life, a better, you know, it's a lot better, and I'm thankful to God for keeping me around.
Yeah. Look what you would have missed, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Look what I would have missed.
All right.
So there's better times ahead, you know, just keep struggling for a better way, you know. If something seems too hard to go through, then, you know, put that aside for a while and think of some pleasant thoughts or even something funny, you know. Like a guy friend of mine used to say, which he passed away now, but he used to go around and say, well, if you want to think of something, just think about me wearing in a bikini and high heels. He was an elderly guy, so imagine seeing a chubby guy, you know, with a bikini and walk around with high heels.
Good. That's good. All right.
Man, you walk in high heels better than I do, you know.
All right. Wow. Okay.
So
we've got about
like that. And I used to have, I'm sure y'all all know about the Sims game. And I used to create different families and stuff. And if I was mad at somebody, I would do like my boyfriend Toby too, because he wanted more bodies in the graveyard. So I would create a Sim and then burn them and let them just so there'd be a ghost of them or something, you know. I'm like, okay, that goes away with it. No. Well, that's putting one thing behind me. You know what I mean? That's putting the things behind me. Or I would go dance in a physical activity or go for long walks. You know, the physical really helped me a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's good. Well, we have about 10 minutes left. And I'm thinking if we had one more round with the panel, and then a closing remark from you, and I think that will probably do it.
Okay.
How's that?
I'll say this one thing right quick. I'm working on my second book, which is called Shattered Innocence. Okay, y'all? Okay.
Scattered Innocence?
No, Shattered Innocence.
Shattered Innocence. Oh, wow. This is great. I'm glad that you're working on another book. Is it helping? Is it sort of like now, do you have some kind of catharsis going on or resolving something or just needs to be told?
Some of the issues that I got with pertaining to my ex-husband, that kind of helps me cathartic in that area.
Good. Okay. All right. Well, congratulations on writing another book. Let's
thank you.
Go go quickly through the panel. We only have about 9 minutes left. So, Bailey, you're on with Darlene. This will be it. Thank you.
I'm not going to take up any time. I think I already basically said what I had to say. Darlene knows what I think of her, and go to someone else.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Bailey, and thank you for being on the panel tonight. Yep. Okay, Carol, there you go. Carol, you're on with Darlene.
Is my mic open? I can't tell on this end. Am I open?
Yeah, yes, you are.
Oh,
yep.
Okay. I think my phone's ready to die. I have nothing more to say other than I think you're awesome. You're doing a wonderful job, and you know what? I'm looking forward to your next book also, and we just love you to death here, okay? You're amongst friends, you're amongst family. Yeah, you know we're here for you. And you help probably a lot of people tonight because there's a lot of people out there, myself included, but a lot of people who go through craziness in their lives. And when we share these type of stories, they see that they're not alone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So thank you so much, honey. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
And thank you, Carol, for being on the panel tonight. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we go to William. William, you're on with Darlene.
Yeah, I have a little insight to where she's going to pick up. She's writing that second book, and that second book is going to kind of pick up where she left from the first book and go on from there. I don't know if she talked any about that, but... That's what some of that's going to be, because that book kind of left you on a cliffhanger, and then she's going to continue on to tell the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say.
Well, William, they cannot go and get that book because of me canceling the contract, I got a lot of the first book in this also.
All right. Okay. Thank you. And thank you, William, for being on the panel tonight. All right. And now we go to Tammy. There you go. Tammy, you're on with Darlene.
Okay. Well, I'd just like to say that this lady is always thinking of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one reason that she decided to write the book.
You
know, she's had to go through a lot of horrible experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
And she may even stop some girls from committing suicide because they had gone through some of these experiences.
Yes, I hope so. And books do that. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to her next book, too. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tammy. And thank you for being on our panel tonight.
Thank you.
All right, Sylvie, you're on with Darlene. Sylvie, do you have your mic on? Sylvie? Okay. All right. We'll go to Laura. And then I'll come back to Sylvie and see if she's got it. Laura, you're on with Darlene.
Darlene, I just wanted to thank you for sharing your story on NASCA. I know you've changed my life in the short time we've known each other, and I know that you've changed other people's lives in listening to your story, giving bravery and courage, and I just want to thank you for that, and I look forward to talking to you again.
I look forward to talking to you too.
All right, and thank you, Laura. Thank you for being on our panel tonight.
Thank
you. Okay, let's see about if Sylvie is back on. Sylvie,
Darlene. Can you hear me now?
Yes, now
can
I can
hear me.
You. Yeah.
You know, I am so technologically challenged. I'm very bright, but when it comes to technology, oh my God, pathetic. Anyway, Darlene. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I feel like I know you a million times better. And I'm hoping that I can direct. I'm about ready to get my NASCA cards. People that I come across, because I have absolutely no experience when it comes to incest or sexual abuse. That was not in my history. So listening to these shows as often as I can, you know, last week I learned about DID, dissociative identity disorder. And so I'm hoping that I can build a arsenal of volunteers that I can direct people to when people share with me, when I share with them. And I'm hoping that I can direct incest and sexual abuse survivors to you. And thank you so much. Thank you so much. You are serving. And I just wanted to, I hope this is okay, since NASCA is about child abuse, that right now we are living in a very precarious time where the domestic violence rates are skyrocketing. Child abuse is going through the roof. Women are sheltering in place with their abusers who abuse them and their children, and we all have to be on the lookout for our neighbors, for our friends, and just be scouting, have our intuition, have our radar up so that we can look out for these people and what happens behind closed doors. I would just like to say that that is part of serving, and right now is a very dangerous time. Thank you so much, Darlene. I appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you so much, too.
And thank you, Sylvie, for being on the panel tonight. All right. You have about 2 minutes for a closing statement. What you want to leave us all with?
Well,
Darlene,
don't give up. Don't give up. Share your story. Be an encouragement to others. You might think that telling your story is might be shallow, or you're just thinking about you. But, you know, when you tell your story, it's really helping somebody else to speak out as well.
Mm-hmm.
Speak out.
That's good.
You see something going on, tell. Don't close your eyes. You know, report.
Mm-hmm. Good.
If you see it.
That's great. Great, great information. Thank you so much for being on tonight. Really learned a lot. And you are, as many have said, you really have the strength, and you're sharing your story, so that it's helping a lot of people. And thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yes, and I look forward to you being on other panels and, you know, being back on and see what happens next. How's that? Okay?
That sounds great.
All right. All right. Thank you so much. Well, 90 minutes goes fast. We had an incredible guest tonight, and a wonderful panel. And I wanted to thank you all for joining us. And I just want to say blessings to all the children and blessings to all the survivors of child abuse. Good night.
Good night.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was-